always appreciate Gene and his humor, and there are many things that I could tell you, but I think I need to get on with this lesson, and we get bogged down in some of those things, we might never get to the lesson. I appreciate very much the opportunity to be with you this morning. I thank you for inviting me to spend the time with you in this lecture. And the topic assigned to me is new wine in old wineskins. I visited a winery once, and also on another occasion, I heard a lecture by a bartender who was supposed to be an expert in the matter of wine. And in all of this, I never did learn anything from them about wineskins. But I did study some other sources to learn that a wineskin is a leather bottle made from the skin of a, well, for the Jews, either a sheep or a goat, usually a goat. But for other people, pigs and other animals in other religious cultures, they tan the hide into leather. They remove the skin by not splitting it, but by pulling it over the animal and cutting off the legs and tying them closed. And then the neck they make into a mouth for a bottle. Put a thing in it so that they can cork it up. And then they put things in it, well, wine, milk, water, other liquids. Usually they only have it in use for a relatively short period of time. And wine, that's a part of this as well. Wine is grape juice in the scriptures, whether fermented or unfermented or at some stage in between. And new wine is fresh grape juice. It is juice that's not yet fully fermented. During the first week of fermentation, the grape juice is kept in open containers, unsealed. Its action is too strong for wineskins any kind, new, old, or any kind. And so it is not put in a closed container. After a week, it is put in other containers, jars, excuse me, or vats, or new, that is to say strong, wineskins, where it continues to ferment for about 40 days, more than a month. Then they put it, after that, in jars that had caps covered with pitch to try to stop the fermentation, and they could keep it that way for up to 3 years. I asked Gordon Wells, who teaches science at Ohio Valley College, why it was that they could put the stuff in jars that way and it wouldn't ferment anymore. He said, well, because when you cover a jar inside a clay jar with pitch, that is to say tar, and then you cover the lid with pitch or tar, and you put grape juice in it or wine in it, and they did sometimes keep fresh grape juice that way, it kills all the bacteria in it. And, you know, it's the hydrocarbons in the tar that does it. And I said, if that's the case, then, you know, how would that stuff do with your stomach? And he said, well, it tastes like tar, you know. And I know a little bit about that because we used to live out in the country where we didn't have anything much at all, and we had an old gas well that gave us free gas, and they pulled some of the pipe out of it and replaced it one time, and we used the pipe to pipe water down from a spring up on the hill, and the water always tasted like gas. so you can imagine. Well, at any rate, old wine was somewhere between 40 days and 3 years in age. Prior to that, it was called new wine, even though it was partly fermented. And during its storage, when it was sealed, and shortly after the seal would be broken on some container it was that it was put in, it would continue its fermentation process. First, it ferments and becomes a little bit alcoholic, depending on how much sugar is in it. Then it ferments some more, and after it's opened, it continues fermenting until it becomes vinegar, at which point it does not ferment anymore because the vinegar is acetic acid, which is strong enough to kill all of the bacteria in it. Consequently, one suspects strongly that a number of the people, many of them who were poorer and could not afford expensive processes, probably drank vinegar a good part of the year. Their wine had turned into vinegar. I don't know what that does to the GI system. My GI system, I doubt, would tolerate that, but anyway. They did not have distilled whiskey or distilled alcohol. As far as we know, they didn't know how to make distilled alcohol. So they didn't have the really strong stuff that people drink when they really want to get drunk fast in our times. But that's not the point. The topic from this teaching of Jesus is found in a parable called the Parable of New Wine and Old Wineskins. We call it that, I guess. Jesus didn't. It is found in Matthew 9, Mark 2, and Luke 5. And perhaps it will be profitable at this point for us to look at a format which I developed. This is my idea, so don't blame anybody else for it. I developed when I was teaching a course on the parables. And I think this format is useful because you can use it on any parable to analyze a parable. And it's not a bad idea to analyze a parable and to teach from a parable what was intended when the parable was given to be taught from it. There are a great many things that are taught, supposedly at least from parables, that the giver of the parable, usually Jesus, had no idea in mind that had any connection with that. And I think that's a mistake to do that, but that's what is often done. New wine and old wineskins, the text I've listed, the subject is fasting when it's appropriate. It was, Jesus said, inappropriate for his disciples to fast during his personal ministry, just as inappropriate as it would be for people at a wedding to be fasting. When you have a wedding feast, people go to it and they don't fast, they feast. It's inappropriate to fast at a wedding. I do see women crying at weddings sometimes, but I hope that those are tears of joy. I don't know. But it's inappropriate to fast at a wedding. It is inappropriate, Jesus said, to put a new patch on an old garment, a new patch that has not been shrunk. They didn't have sanitized stuff and polyester stuff and that sort of thing. So if you put an unshrunk patch on an old garment, when you wash it, the new patch shrinks and it tears the garment, makes it worse than it was to begin with. It's inappropriate to do that. When you put new wine in old wineskins, in old wineskins, I generally do not stutter, but I sure do splutter. Well, anyway, when you put new wine into old wineskins, the fermentation causes carbon dioxide to be released to the extent that it will burst the skins. These old skins are not flexible. The new skins are flexible, and so it can handle some expansion, not a whole lot, but some expansion. The topics The incidental lesson that could be learned from this, and that's what a lot of people deal with here, the incidental lessons have to do with appropriateness of other things. I've made a suggestion here. I want to repeat it several times because I think it's important. The principle of appropriateness could be applied to many things. However, I believe that to do that, we had better have a scripture that substantiates such an application, because that's not what was intended in this parable. To do this, we need to study the topics of the context. The context always tells you what a thing means. The context of this, the larger context, is first of all criticism for eating at the house of Levi or Matthew, where they made a feast. And Jesus was criticized for eating with publicans and sinners, tax collectors and sinners, maybe tax collectors and other sinners. Well, anyway, he was criticized for that. But in fact, he had to do that if he was going to convert those people. He came to seek and to save the lost. He didn't come to save the righteous. And so it was appropriate for him to eat with those people. The criticisms for that were before this in the context in all three Gospels where it's listed. And the context after that has to do with miracles, the raising of the daughter of Jairus, the woman who was bleeding, had a hemorrhaging situation on the way there, two blind men at Jericho, and a demon that made a man dumb, all of those things. And then there was controversy in Mark and Luke, in the context afterwards, controversy about plucking grain on the Sabbath. It would seem that the parables here, these three parables, don't really have a connection with the larger context. But the immediate context is a question about why Jesus' disciples did not fast. The question is brought by the disciples of John, and also by the Pharisees. And the question had to do with disciples of John, the Pharisees, and the disciples of the Pharisees. I do not know why John's disciples sided with the Pharisees in this situation. I suppose they were fasting because John was no longer with them. I had been put in prison, I guess. But I'm not certain about the exact timing of that, about the exact chronology about that. Some of the Gospels don't always agree on the chronology because they weren't designed to be books of chronology, but to tell what Jesus did. The question was asked about why they didn't fast, and Jesus gave three parables. The parable of the friends of the bridegroom, the parable of the new patches on old garments, and the parable of new wine in old wineskins, the one which we have been asked to address this hour. Now, the question that may have occasioned this parable, often that will tell you what a parable means, and it's plain this time. Why don't your disciples fast? Like we do, like the Pharisees, the disciples of the Pharisees, and John's disciples. The Pharisees customarily fasted twice a week. But that was no part of the Old Testament law now. The Old Testament law prescribed fasting only one day, and that was the Day of Atonement. It was a fast day. But they had other traditions about fasting. Some of them dated back to the destruction of Jerusalem by Nebuchadnezzar, and some of them are dealt with by the Old Testament prophets. Not in a complimentary way, by the way. When the Old Testament prophets talk about it, they are critical of their fasting because it was a selfish kind of fasting, they said. So you could hardly base fasting on those traditions. But the Pharisees were proud of the fact that they fasted. The Pharisee who went up to pray said, "I thank God that I'm not like other men. I fast twice in the week. Twice every week I fast." So they thought somebody who didn't fast on their traditional fast days was less than righteous. But those were their fast days that they had devised, tradition, and there were good reasons why Jesus' disciples did not fast on those days or on whatever days it was. Sometimes you'll have a key word that introduces an introductory formula or something that helps you with this. In this case, there is none. No key words to help you in that situation. Now, I think it would be appropriate at this point to look at some of the statements that are made, and I hope that this is large enough that you can see it, to look at some of the statements which are made in the three Gospels that we're talking about. In Matthew 9, verse 14, and Mark 2, verse 18, and Luke 5, verse 33, the question is brought up. They said the disciples of John fast often. We do, they said. And the Pharisees fast often. And in Mark, he talks about the disciples of the Pharisees. And in Luke, he talks about them. But your disciples eat and drink. You eat and drink, they eat and drink. Why? Well, in Matthew 9:15 and in Mark 2, beginning with verse 19 and 20, and in Luke 5:34 and 35, he talks about the first parable. The parable has to do with the sons of the bride chamber. Now, Jesus is the bridegroom. The church is his bride. We learn that from statements like Ephesians 5:25 and 26. And John himself, John the Baptist, made a statement about Jesus and the bridegroom and so on. And Jesus refers to that here. And the disciples are called the sons of the bride chamber. That is, the friends of the bridegroom. That's what that means. They don't fast while the bridegroom is with them, but when the bridegroom is taken away from them, then they will fast. In the book, I have suggested that this would be when Jesus was crucified and taken to heaven. Now, it may be that he's just referring there to the time between the crucifixion and the resurrection. He doesn't really say. So when he's taken from them, would be at that time, but also he was, of course, taken from them when he ascended into heaven. So however that may be, the point is that while he was with them during his personal ministry, it was not appropriate to fast. When the friends of the bridegroom go to the wedding feast, they don't fast. You just don't do that. And so it was not appropriate. And what Jesus is saying is, this is sort of like a wedding feast, his being with the disciples. And so it wasn't appropriate to fast. They would find it more appropriate to feast, which is what they were doing and what these people were being critical of. And then he goes into the business about the garments, an old patch on a new garment. Let me see if I can move this up and put the rest of it under that. Maybe I'll have to paper stick together. Maybe I'll have to put something on it to make it stay in place. There are various purposes that you can find for a coin purse. That'll be one of them. Now, the old garment with the new patch on it. He says that's not appropriate. You don't take a piece of undressed cloth. This is from the American Standard Version, by the way. Unfold, one version says. It will tear it. That's no good. And then he gets down to the wineskins. Verse 17 of Matthew 9. They don't take new wine and put it in the old wineskins. If they do, the skins burst. The wine is spilled. The skins perish. And it's pointed out here that the wine and the skins both perish. The wine perishes and the skins perish. They put it into fresh wineskins. And both are preserved. In Luke, he adds something else when he gets down here. An interesting statement. And no man, having drunk old wine, desireth new, for he saith, the old is good, or meaning better by comparison, I guess. A rather interesting statement. Now, looking at this, let's go on to another thing. Actually, we ought to probably go on and come back to this in just a moment. The story itself, the summary of the story, is simple enough. You take the wine and you put it, fresh grape juice, into new wineskins, not old wineskins. You don't want the new wine in old wineskins. It will break them, and they'll be lost. The skins are hardened. They're inflexible. They'll burst. Use fresh wineskins or new, whether the leather is still pliable, so that it can expand a little bit. That's the message. Please understand, Jesus is not here dealing with the issue of whether one should drink intoxicating wine. That's not the point. He is dealing with a culture in which there are things that they did that they know about, and he is using that as an illustration. All right? Wine here, special words that you need to note in any parable. The wine is grape juice, and the wineskins, animal skins. Interpretation difficulties. Some parables have interpretation difficulties, and here's one in this. Is this parable speaking only to the issue of the appropriateness of fasting, or is it capable of being understood to be contrasting the Old Testament with the New? Or something of that sort, maybe law and tradition. The context is vital in determining the meaning of this. There is no contextual evidence here that justifies allegorizing this parable that I can see to make new wine or wineskins, either one, refer to the new covenant as versus the old covenant. He is not in this context talking about covenants. He is not anywhere in the context, either the broader context or the immediate context, referring to differences between the old law and the new law. He's simply saying that as long as he's with his disciples, it's not appropriate for them to fast. It's true that there is a tradition involved in this, because the reason they were fasting was because of custom or tradition that they had developed. And it's true that Jesus is saying that it's not appropriate for them to be following this tradition at this point, but he doesn't really deal here. He does elsewhere, but he doesn't really deal here with the matter of tradition. Historical application, first century application. It was appropriate to fast while you're mourning. But while Jesus was with his disciples before the crucifixion, and it may very well be that what we're talking about here is just before the crucifixion, but it may also be after he's taken to heaven. At any rate, while he is with the disciples, it was not a time for mourning. Thus, it was not a time for fasting, because mourning and fasting go together pretty much. Fasting was no more appropriate than it would be to put new wine in old wineskins. General application today, I think to fast when it is appropriate to fast. Fasting is not commanded in the New Testament. Jesus in the Sermon on the Mount described what they should be doing when they fasted. If you fast, here's what you do, you know. You don't put on a long face and throw ashes on you and so forth and go around looking sad. But you act like nothing has happened. You act like you have eaten a full meal, in other words. You're not fasting for public display. I rather think that the Pharisees may have been fasting for public display. They did a number of things for public display. But it's not appropriate to do that, and one should fast when it's appropriate. It is not commanded in the New Testament. Incidental applications now. to this, to the matter of appropriateness, could be made to anything that's inappropriate. But to do that, I would insist on some other scriptural evidence to support that application. There is a rule in hermeneutics that sometimes people violate. The rule is important, and the rule is accurate, I think, and that is that a thing may not mean, a passage may not mean something that it never meant. Which is simply to say, you don't take something out of its context and apply it to suit yourself. If you allegorize things, then you fall into the trap that Origen, Clement of Alexandria, and those who succeeded them followed. They allegorized things, and that allegorical method of interpretation probably held sway for 1,000 years, I suppose, in Catholicism. But the allegorical interpretation allows you to do almost anything with almost any passage. And that is mishandling Scripture, I believe. You can take anything out of context and make it into an allegory, and who knows what it means then? It means whatever you want it to mean. Surely the Scripture is not that ambiguous. I don't think that is a right way to handle it. So let's go back now to our parable here, and maybe we'll have occasion to look at this again. I can put it all on here in such a way that we can get it on, or get most of it on at any rate. I want the latter part on particularly, because that's the part that deals with the wineskins. So we'll just put that up that way. Now, when you come to the parable and what it means, let's recap the thing a little bit now. After being criticized for eating with tax collectors and sinners, Jesus was asked why his disciples did not fast like the Pharisees and the disciples of John. His answer to them was in three parables. When you combine the three accounts, it shows that John's disciples and the Pharisees had made a habit of regularly fasting. Praying, incidentally, is referred to here once, but the issue is not about prayer. The real issue is about fasting. Jesus had just attended a feast at Matthew's house at a time when Mark tells us the Pharisees and John's disciples were fasting. I don't know, was that on Monday or Thursday or something like that at any rate? They were fasting at that time. They had already criticized him for eating with publicans and sinners. Now they criticize him for not fasting at the traditional time. Prayer is mentioned, as I said, in Luke 5:33, but the question is really about fasting. It is like the question about eating with tax collectors and sinners, and later questions about Sabbath observance. It was about tradition rather than about the law itself. The law specified fasting only on the Day of Atonement. That's the only time that it did that. The Pharisees, however, regularly equated their traditions with the law. And Jesus often challenged their traditions and insisted that they were hypocrites because of their traditions. And they took their traditions and caused them to violate the law by following their traditions. The point Jesus is making is this is not a time for mourning. It's not a time for bereavement. It is a time for feasting, not fasting. After Jesus was crucified, there would be plenty of time for fasting and mourning at that time. Fasting is connected with mourning frequently. Without changing the subject, Jesus continued to show that fasting at that time would be no more appropriate than putting a new patch on an old garment or putting new wine into old wineskins. When you do that, you create more problems. The message is that fasting would not be appropriate. It would not be appropriate because it would destroy both the wine and the wineskins. McGarvey comments on this in the Fourfold Gospel. He says the thought here is that as wine should be put into skins suited for it, and as at an entertainment the different kinds of wine should be served in appropriate succession, so fasting should be observed on suitable occasions, and not, for instance, in a wedding. Jesus here is not arguing against drinking intoxicating wine, nor is he arguing for it. The intent in all three parables is to illustrate the truth that fasting was not appropriate at that time. Now, how should it be applied today? Here we run into very interesting things. You look at the commentaries. Maybe the majority of commentaries. I do not lay any claim to having attempted even to consult all commentaries. That even would be ridiculous. But some people, Filson, Hendrickson, Barnes, Anderson, Alford, Gould, and among our brethren, J.S. Lamar, B.W. Johnson, Franklin Camp, Gary Workman, Jack Lewis, Ken Hope, and others, ignore the context and apply it to the old versus the new law. Or to old versus new tradition. If that had been Jesus' intent, it seems to me that consistency would require him to contrast the new wine with the old wine, not the new wine with the old wineskins. I mean, that doesn't seem quite to fit. What is more, Luke 5:39 throws a monkey wrench into some of these applications when it says, "No man having drunk old wine desireth new, for he saith the old is good." How can that apply to the Old Testament versus the new? If this matter of the wineskins is intended by Jesus, or if he intended for us to interpret it this way, to contrast the old law and the new law, what does Luke 5:39 say? That the old law is better than the new law? It doesn't fit, does it? It doesn't fit. And the reason it doesn't fit is because he's not talking about the law. He's not talking about a contrast between the law, the old law, and the new law. In his commentary on Matthew and Mark, J.W. McGarvey says this: "The argument drawn from these two examples is not, as some have supposed, that it would be absurd to patch the old Jewish garment with the unfulled cloth of the gospel, or to put the new wine of the gospel into the old Jewish bottles." And of course, that's exactly what a number of these other commentators are saying. McGarvey says, "For the question at issue was not one concerning the proper relation of the gospel dispensation to the Jewish law, but one concerning the propriety of fasting on certain occasions." He says that to carry out the contrast would make Jesus in Luke 5:39 say that the old dispensation is better than the new, which I just agreed with. C.E.W. Doris, by the way, says exactly the same thing on this passage in exactly the same words. I do believe, if I have read it correctly, without giving any credit or having any quotation marks, he must be plagiarizing McGarvey, the best I can figure. At any rate, Zur agrees with this. Zur says it would be an abrupt change of subject from anything that has been said for several chapters. Nothing in the conversation between Jesus and the audience would call for the injection of a highly figurative argument concerning the comparative merits of the Old and New Testaments. I believe, he says, the whole point is simply a lesson on the subject of appropriateness. The disciples of John could fittingly mourn because he had been taken from them. Jesus was still with his disciples, and they could not appropriately mourn. And he says it would be well to recall the words of Ecclesiastes 3:4, "There's a time to weep and a time to laugh." Now that may be well said. The message of these parables, when taken in context, in each of the three Gospels where they're found, is Jesus' answer to why they were not fasting at that time. It has nothing to do with the old law or the new law. Only in the sense that it is not appropriate to mix the old law with the new law could it be said that the new wine refers to the new law and the old wineskins the old law. Now, somebody said, well, it's not appropriate to mix the new law with the old law. Well, of course it's not. But how do you learn that? Not by reading about the wine and the wineskins. You have got to learn that from some other passage of Scripture. Such a passage as Colossians 2, 14 through 17, or Galatians 5, 3 and 4, or Hebrews 1, 1 and 2, or Hebrews chapter 8, or Hebrews chapter 9. There are many passages like that. I suggest that if we wax eloquent with allegorization and go to passages like this to prove something that is as plainly stated as it is by the writer of Hebrews and by Paul in Colossians 2 and Galatians 5, we weaken our case. I don't think we need to do that. The same thing is true about mixing modern religious practices with the ancient gospel. It's inappropriate, of course. But there are passages that deal with that much more clearly than this passage does. If this passage even does it, and I don't think it does it at all. You can go to Galatians 1, 6 through 9, if you want to talk about mixing the gospel with other things, other ideas. You can go to 2 John 9, 10, 11, Revelation 22, 18 to 19. Lots of passages deal with it. Let's use them, not the wineskins passage. Now, the basic message is that it's inappropriate to fast at that time. And by extension, we can generalize the principle to show that many things are inappropriate in our day, but we cannot do it unless we can substantiate it by other passages. I believe it is on the borderline, at least, of being dishonest with the Scripture to use it in a way that it was not intended to be used originally. And certainly, if we're going to talk about the principle of appropriateness, we can find passages that deal very directly with what it is that we're talking about being appropriate. And I thank you very much.